You're listening to Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken on the Tangent Bound Network.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken.
This is going to be quite a ride.
Say, Jim, boom! That's a bad outfit. Boom!
I love you.
Me too, man. Hit me, my turn! Am I the meanest?
Sure
enough. Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough.
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Sure enough.
Well, who am I?
Sure enough.
The Shogun of Harlem.
For what lies ahead, ready are you?
We're police officers. We're not trained to handle this kind of violence.
Hey, Geeksters. I'm Kylan.
And I'm Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Welcome back, Geeksters, issue 109 of Geek Watch 1, and we got some interesting new equipment that's sitting here.
Yeah.
I know, you and your equipment.
Hey, it's always fun playing with new toys. So
guys love playing with their equipment.
So it sounds a little different. I'm still playing with this, and it's going to sound, it'd be really cool. So, and Kylan, you don't even have yours up and running yet, do you?
I did, but I don't now.
He did, but just with the wrong cords.
Yeah.
Reboot.
Well, you got to have the right cords, too. Playing with your equipment's all fine and good as long as you have the right cord.
Right. That is important.
Got to get things plugged in the right way.
Right.
That's right. Later on in the show, we're going to get into this, but you guys actually did an interview this week with an author.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we had fun Thursday night.
You guys had Derek Ferguson, who's a pulp author, and we'll get more into that later. But Vicky and I had some fun Thursday night, too. The reason we weren't able to make it to the for the interview was I actually am starting a new project with our friend Marcus Calvert.
Nice.
Sweet.
We started the first session of recording the audiobook of iVillain.
Okay.
And Marcus, now I've done some audio stuff with him before, a couple of short stories. He called it his Tansom project that I recorded with him last year, and it came out nice and it sounds good. But it's weird because Marcus isn't actually doing the recording on this one.
Oh?
He got Mark Bogner from the Tangentbound Network is actually doing the actual speaking and recording on this one. So he's now the voice of Cly.
Oh, really?
Well, Mark does have the radio voice.
Yes, he does. So
and can do many different ones too.
Right. Well, yes. You know, I was present when Mike offered it.
Okay.
And I was like, and because he said, well, you know, if you need someone, and he went into his voice, you know, so he's like, well, you know, if you need someone to do some reading for you, and then Marcus is like. Oh, we're going to make this happen.
Marcus never says no to an opportunity.
No.
Yeah.
So.
As you shouldn't, really.
Yeah, so we had a great time. We were up there. What?
That's cool.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, it was me and Vicky and Marcus and Mike and Mark. It was weird. We had Mark, Marcus, and Mike, and then me and Vicky. Ken and Vicky. It doesn't kind of match the set.
Right, you were in the McFarland secret recording lair. Right.
Oh yeah, Kylan, I got to get you up there at some point to check this out. His studio is awesome, considering it's just in his basement.
Yeah, I've seen photos, so yeah, I can definitely say it's awesome.
It's amazing.
I can imagine having an actual studio like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we will
soon.
Well, that's true.
That is in the plans.
Oh man.
I slightly have something. It's kind of geeky, kind of not geeky, but Ken was kind of proud of himself.
We got to debunk a Bigfoot video.
Yeah, we
nice.
We completely debunked it. Well, I saw the video earlier this week, and I had said, you know, looked at it, and everyone said, you know, looked like really bad CG. So being up at Mike's house and him knowing, you know, that kind of stuff, he's like, yeah, that's just a loop.
It's a really bad animation loop. Since Mike's a graphic artist, it was easy for him to recognize it.
To say exactly what it was. So yesterday when we were out and about, we went and we recreated the video.
Yeah. Well,
it was supposedly digging in a graveyard, and the best part is it was right next to Old Rolling Acres, right there by the road, and we went, and we were able to trace the entire footsteps and looked, and I found the exact spot. It was a fresh grave.
Oh, jeez.
So what I think what happened is they animated a little GIF over top of where they were getting ready to, like, they had started, like, maybe digging the grave, and then they pasted that over top of it. But I found the exact spot. So, of course, I went back to the trolls and sent them a picture and said, Bigfoot planted flowers.
Yeah, because now the grave is a mound of dirt with a line of flowers across the top of it.
Yeah, because one, nice. Because one of the trolls was like, because I had said, you know, it's because another podcast that I used to love found out that they were complete BSers. And they're putting up, it's real, and I'm like, it's bad CG. And another troll came at me and said, oh, it's this, and the funny part is I can't really repeat what his bio says, but it's like blank, 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 Akron.
Okay.
And he's like, yeah, it was, you know, he was trying to say it was a woman that had a psychotic break digging up a fresh grave. No.
Yeah.
Fresh grave in the process of being dug up.
You see the shadowy looking thing they put over it. Now, this is bright daylight that they filmed this, and obviously it was the driver of the car holding a cell phone, so it was all shaky, and she drops it at one point. But the animation they put in there looked like basically a shadow with pipe cleaner arms.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
But it was cool because we were actually able to redo the video ourselves and get the exact same shot she did.
Oh, wow.
The only difference is nice. The camera was, I was filming it from the passenger side. That's the only difference.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the way I was able to figure out where it was they had said it was Norton, Ohio, which you guys are from the area. I don't think Norton really doesn't have any large cemeteries. Anybody who doesn't know, Norton, Ohio is actually a suburb of, or right outside of Akron. So it's just one of the little towns that are up against us. And but Greenlawn Cemetery, do you know where that's at, right beside the Old Rolling Acres Mall? That's where this was at. Because it's the only cemetery in the area that does not have headstones.
And you could see the main road from where this video was
right.
taken.
Yeah. So, but in the video, they said they're in the cemetery and everything's flat. There's plaques on the ground and that's it. But this is the only cemetery that does that. So we drove around and found the building, found the grave and everything. It was great.
Very cool.
So that was an extra hour yesterday of us playing around on our way home from other things. So what else have you guys done this week?
Actually, it's been a fairly quiet week.
Amazingly quiet week, yeah. Because, you know, there were no big movies to go see or anything. And, yeah, so it was a pretty quiet week.
Cool.
Well, we got... that's about it.
We finally got a chance to sit down and watch Underworld Blood Wars and Resident Evil Final Chapter.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting. Well, we knew they came out in January, so we got a chance to see them finally. It wasn't. They basically were your standard Underworld and Resident Evil movies. They weren't the greatest movie ever made, but they were not terrible. I mean, but those movies usually are not extremely terrible.
Yeah, you get what you expect.
Exactly.
I like the Resident Evil movies. But see, I like that action horror kind of thing anyway. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of cool when they at least have a chance to defeat the monsters.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Well, I noticed Underworld was awesome because Underworld has a lot about the mythology of what the Lycans and the vampires and stuff like that, and it gets a lot into the story.
Yeah, that's the way it is. A lot of like crossing lines and like get hooking up too.
Yeah. Well, that's just part of that's the other half of Underworld. Is everybody trying to see who's going to hook up with who? And
after the first movie, they knew they needed all of that to get the audience back.
Yeah. Well, Resident Evil, well, I was surprised. It was basically, there was very little of anything but action. It seems like the more Resident Evils you get, the less story you get, and the more of just killing things.
Yeah.
And whoever was directing on this one, I think it was Paul W.S. Verhoeven, actually directed this one. He's done three of the, five or six they've done. And it was just straight action cuts and jump cuts all over the place. I mean, it was a little head spinning, but if you're into zombie killing action, that's what this was. They even brought back some of the gags from the other ones. Like they have to break into the hive for this one, which is a Resident Evil thing.
Right.
But breaking into the hive, they get back into the glass corridor with the lasers. They use that again a little bit and use some new stuff for that. There was some other stuff there. You guys have seen the Resident Evil movies, right?
I
saw the first one and then decided there's no way I need to watch the rest.
I think I've seen like the first four.
Okay. Well, the hive is built like a cylinder almost underground.
Right.
And it had that large section above that is just it looks like it could be on the maps, it looks like just a large cylindrical section. What that is, that's they found out that, I'm going to spoil this for everybody, but that's actually floor after floor of cryogenic chambers. And the whole idea was originally the T-virus was released on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And it's basically an ark. So all of the people who run the Umbrella Corporation are the only ones who get to survive.
Is that the one that's that building? It's the City Hall in Toronto?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so. It is. It's all in Toronto. That's why I saw the first movie, I think.
Yeah, so it was fun stuff. And it was,
I think,
just...
that's the last one in this run of Resident Evil, and then they're rebooting it again or something, aren't they? Because the last one Jovovich was going
to
be in.
Right. Yeah, this is supposed to be the last one as far as I know. I didn't know they were rebooting it. They probably will, because they've made plenty of money on this.
Right, like every time they come to the supposed end of a series, there's talk of rebooting, so it might be a few years, but it'll probably happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at the games, Alice isn't in all the games.
Right.
So you can always do a story that happened in this world, it just didn't have anything to do with her.
Yeah, they could just do spin-off in the same universe. And then, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where I think sometimes people have a problem with reboot after reboot. It's like, you've built this world, just move to a different spot in it. That's where I've not seen Fear the Walking Dead, but that to me seemed like a great concept, because you know what? We've built this world full of zombies. This is what's happening. So let's see what happens over on this side of the planet.
Right. I mean, that worked out pretty well. Like, I wasn't really a fan of that show, but it was set before The Walking Dead and in a different section of the country. So it kind of had two things going at once where they could have totally different characters and play with different plot lines over that. So, yeah, that was working pretty well.
So, and then what did you say? You just found out about Canada?
Oh, you know.
It's legal to duel now.
I guess she said it's legal to duel in Canada now?
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. What was that? It's finally been made illegal because they've finally been... they're finally revamping the criminal code, which Canada has a criminal code that applies federally.
Okay.
It's not just by province, as a lot of the states tend to do here. And it was still in the criminal code that it was legal to duel.
Okay.
And so they're finally getting rid of a lot of the archaic laws that are in there.
You mean to tell me I could have dueled in Canada and it would have been legal?
Yeah.
Well, that's like the awesome. Blue laws here. Go ahead.
The thing is, you could duel, but if you ended up killing someone, you'd still be charged with that. But you could actually challenge someone to a duel.
I can see the metal gloves coming out, smacking somebody in the face.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, that's like the blue laws here. If anybody gets a chance to, and actually most of the websites here, they're called blue laws here in America. Yeah. That stuff, like, it's illegal to hunt whale in Ohio.
Yeah,
but it's legal to hump animals.
Some places.
There's certain places you can't harass squirrels.
Yeah. I think Kentucky had one that you could beat your wife on the courtroom steps on Sundays as long as you'd use a switch no bigger than your thumb.
Yeah, there are some really weird ones out there.
There was another one somewhere that I heard about that it was when a woman's driving a car, or a woman driving a vehicle, her husband has to walk 15 feet in front of it swinging a lantern.
Yeah,
I remember hearing about that one. Yeah,
these are laws. A lot of them are still on the books, just because no one changed it.
Yep, exactly.
So let me get this right. Uh-oh. Okay, so Canada gets its constitution in 1984.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And then 33 years later, it's illegal to duel.
Yeah, but murder was illegal long before that.
Right. I'm not saying that murder wasn't illegal. I'm pretty sure.
I bet you anything. If you look up some of these blue laws for the U.S., you will find at least one that involves dueling.
Well, see,
at least one that still exists.
I really do wish dueling was legal, because people would not be jerks. Because when dueling was legal, there was real consequences for your actions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you disrespect somebody. Said, "Well, okay. Well, meet me in the courtyard at 6 a.m." And be all of a sudden, you're like, "Oh, I said blah blah blah. Now I'm gonna die." that might be a little extreme, but I'm just saying, like, people probably be a little more.
You could make maybe like knife dueling legal or something. You know, less lethal, perhaps.
That's true.
Unless you have really good aim.
Well, you know.
Easier to avoid a knife than a bullet.
Yeah, but we all know that Kylan would never get involved in a duel. I mean, there's nothing that would get him to do it. He won't even T-duel.
Oh, Don witnessed me in a mock knife fight.
That's true, I did.
At a convention. I would do that before a T-duel, I'll be honest.
So we know, Kylan would rather fight with knives than tea biscuits.
Yeah.
T-dueling is a dangerous sport.
Look, I cut a knife master. I can actually say that I cut a blade
That's
master.
True, you got a shot in with the fake knife, yeah.
I did, so, you know, I'm not saying that I'm that good with knife, because chances are I probably would be on the ground as well. But you know what?
So let's move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No dueling on the show. Do not challenge us to duels. We're not doing anything of the sort.
unless I, you know what? I forgot that Tekken 7 came out earlier this month.
Oh, right.
Because I was looking through because there was talk of, we were talking about E3. And all of a sudden I'm like, wait. Didn't Tekken 7 come out? And Don said, yeah. And I'm like, wait, I put money down on this.
So, he pre-ordered the game a couple months ago and totally forgot.
Ah.
So I have been playing through Tekken 7.
You know? Now, are you able to play that online against other players?
I am, because I have a PS Live, or whatever it is called. Yeah. So I have that. And so, yeah.
Which, by the way, if you missed it during E3, it was $10 off for the 12-month subscription.
Nice.
And if you had the PS4, you can download a demo for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, which that was fun. So
they're coming out with action figures for that, like sets of action figures where you get a Marvel figure and a Capcom figure.
Oh,
cool.
I saw one that. That one that was, it was Iron Man versus, is it Mega Man?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are coming out.
Ah, oh, crap.
Now, I don't know if that's a San Diego thing or if it's going to be widespread, but I saw something about one
of
them.
I have no space.
That's going to be interesting. That's going to be interesting to see what they do with Mega Man. Are they going to make it cartoony looking, or is he going to be actually looking like the action figures like an Iron Man?
In the game, Kylan was playing it, so I've already seen Mega Man, and he kind of looks like a bit of a mix. He's not overly cartoony. He kind of matches up pretty well. So I would think the action figure itself is not going to be overly, like, not very anime looking.
Right. Yeah, like, Mega Man is no joke. He's a powerful character. Cool. And they kind of
he's a little guy though.
He's a little guy. just like Rocket. Rocket's a little guy too.
You can have a whole team of little guys. Like there's you know, a lot of little characters in these games.
That'd be hard. You know,
cuz you have Rocket and you have Mega Man and you have who's that Lancelot or something? There was some knight.
Yeah, from Ghouls and Goblins. I forget his name.
Oh, wow. They pulled something out of Ghouls and Goblins?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
From everywhere.
That's old school. That's an NES game.
Yeah, and actually he's in Marvel vs. Capcom 3 as well.
Nice.
Yeah, so
it's a good selection of characters.
It is.
So, hey, do you want to have some of our listeners find you and play with you on PlayStation Live? What's your ID?
I'm Bluesman1103. So hit me up. And we can play.
And then beat his butt.
That's right, Geeksters. You heard it. Bluesman1103. Find him on the PlayStation Network, and you can play games with our own Kylan.
Challenge him and beat him down. He doesn't play very often. You can beat him.
I don't know because my law game is still pretty strong. So
I don't know. You're button masher from what I saw the other
day. That was not button mashing. That's the way I
play most of the time.
Yeah. That's how I play, and I end up beating Kylan if I play against him, so it works.
But see, I actually use technique and things, button mashing.
No one needs technique.
Huh?
No one needs technique.
See, I don't know. Just wait.
So we'll see. Well, we'll let you know if anyone challenges him.
That's right. So do we have any well, we do have some show news, because we got coming up next week is the next Meeplecast, next Saturday.
This Saturday.
Yeah. Yes, this Saturday. Well, the way we record these.
Hey, no. It is this Saturday because we're recording on Sunday. So it's the next Saturday coming up here is this Saturday.
Right. Yeah. And we will be talking about the third quarter movies. And it looks like the second half of summer is going to be a lot bigger than the first half of summer, I think, with some of this stuff.
A little bit.
So, but other than that, what else do we have in Geek Watch 1 news? Anything special?
I don't think there's much for our show news. No.
Okay. I was saying, what were we talking, there was something before the show we were talking about that I was like, hey, we got to talk about that on the show.
We got a dead dog.
Well, yeah, the she's not causing problems. This is awesome. but I don't know.
Sleeping upside down.
So, well, Dawn, what do you have for in the way of regular just geek news out there?
There was not a lot going on this week.
E3, but I didn't catch any of the updates for that.
Well, yeah, even from E3, there wasn't a lot of news. Like, they had a thing about the new Spider-Man game that was coming out and that kind of thing. But the one thing I did get out of E3 was the Xbox release of what had formerly been known as Project Scorpio.
Yeah, what are they calling it now?
It's the Xbox One X.
Okay.
It's their next console. They had a big fanfare about it and everything. And it's being touted as the most powerful console to ever be made. It'll allow you to play games in true 4K, gives you 6 teraflops of computing and 12 gigs of GDDR5 RAM.
Nice.
It basically means you can do a hell of a lot with it. It comes out near the beginning of November and is $500.
That's not bad. If I remember right, the Xbox One was like 6 when it first came out.
Yeah, when they first came out, it was, and this is got a hell of a lot more power to it. So,
did they mention, does this have backward compatibility so you can actually play your Xbox One games and stuff on it?
It will be completely backwards compatible with Xbox One.
Nice.
So no problem about there. And apparently the new hardware is also compatible with all of the Xbox One accessories.
Oh, cool. And I had heard a rumor somewhere, they may not have mentioned there, that this Microsoft is looking at this to be their last console they ever actually make.
That part I don't know, but yeah. Because it could be. If it's supposed to be the most powerful and everything, they'll get a lot of play out of it.
They're looking, yeah, that, and I believe they're looking at being able to start making them where they're upgradable.
Oh, really?
So, as technology gets better and stuff, you just upgrade it to the next hard drive or whatever you need.
Nice.
Because, well, Xbox for a while and PlayStation 2 have had it where you can actually plug in an external hard drive. So if you run out of space on it, you can always plug in another one.
Right.
So.
And actually, speaking of Xbox, last week on Thursday on our gaming blog, we had something about a Dreamcast emulator that's being created for Xbox.
Oh, cool.
That you'll be able to play all the Dreamcast games. They're talking about it being this summer. They don't have a date because they're actually offering it for free, but they're doing just, you know, kind of a donation kind of thing that if they do get money towards it, it'll happen sooner rather than later, but they're still working on it slowly.
Okay. Now, is this actually Microsoft putting this out, or is it private third party?
No, it's a private party. It's got some weird company name, but it's on, go to our Playing Around blog from Thursday. It's on there. And but Microsoft kind of opened up the Xbox platform so people were able to create things like this that worked hand in hand and were able to the instructions are really easy in terms of being able to load it into your system. So that's basically what they're working off of. And Microsoft apparently doesn't fight these sort of things. They let people go ahead with them, especially if it's being offered for free. They don't worry about it.
Oh, nice.
So well, yeah.
I know working with the Akron Makerspace and going over there and seeing what they've had set up on their game nights and stuff, it seems like the Xbox is the one that's easily, if you want to call it hackable, because they had a couple of Xboxes that were running that had already on the hard drive all of the NES games, all your SNES games, and all your Sega games, all built into the Xbox.
Yeah, it's because of whatever they did a few years back about opening it up somehow, and I don't know if legally speaking they had to or something, but that's what was that allows for that to happen versus PlayStation stuff.
Well, also for a lot of people like in the maker movement and stuff, that gives a one up on the PlayStation that, you know what, if you buy the Xbox, you can do all this stuff to it.
Yeah, okay. And I think that's why Microsoft doesn't really fight it too much.
Yeah,
it means they're selling more Xbox. So.
Exactly, and they're still going to sell the games because people still want to play the regular games.
Exactly, right. Exactly. So that was an interesting piece of news. The only other thing I had was something that Kylan got excited about. In September, there's a new comic coming out from Boom Studios titled Old Man Jack.
Okay.
And yes, it is it's an older Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, nice. Well, Boom Studios is the ones actually doing the Big Trouble in Little China comic right now, aren't they?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
So this one is set in 2020, and you've basically got a hell on earth, and Jack is trying to fight everything again, and it's not gonna change much aside from him being a little older and probably cranky about aches and pains. But I saw some of the initial drawings; they're easy to find online. Saw some of the initial art for it, and it basically does just look like an older Jack, essentially. Not quite the way he looks in Guardians of the Galaxy with Ego,
right.
But he's clean shaven, but he pretty much still has the hair.
Right.
So, expect an older Jack in September if you. And I will tell you, I've read one of the, I haven't read the comics, but I have read one of the novels they have out, which is kind of a sequel to Big Trouble in Little China. It's called Big Trouble in Mother Russia. It has the text of it, the story of it has the total feel of the movie. And I know the comics reflect the same thing because it's been published through the same people and everything. And it totally has the voice of Jack Burton. He's still the smartass and the sarcastic one and everything. And he's got a lot of his one-liners and that. So you can expect a lot of that with the comic, I would think.
Well, you'd think the nice thing is this is falling in the same way that Star Trek, Star Wars, and some of these other reboot stuff, some of the really good reboots are going, that you have fans who grew up loving these properties, and they know them in, out, up, down, what they sound like, what they smell like, what they look like, and then you have them making the new content, and it feels like it's supposed to be there, because these people know it as well, if not better, than the original creators did.
Exactly. And I mean, think about it, even for us. We've seen some of these movies so many times. You have the lines memorized. You have the attitude memorized.
Right. I mean, they're I think currently they have a Jack Burton Snake Plissken miniseries going on right now. And I'm just like, how awesome is that?
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, yeah.
They know what to get their fans.
That's right. Yeah,
and I'm like, just shut up and take my money. And I'm waiting on the trades for that. But Boom has Boom has Big Trouble in Little China. And I think they're doing Power Rangers. There's a couple of other series in there that.
If you're not aware, Boom is owned by Disney.
Yeah. Well, what it is Boom's trying to break into IDW's lock on TV properties and movie properties.
Yeah, I mean, and IDW has no shame at all. I mean, they got Ghostbusters, TMNT,
all of the Hasbro properties,
all the Hasbro stuff.
They bought all the Hasbro.
And, you know, I'm like, did somebody go back to like 1984 and they're like, let's see. Okay, how are we going to get Kylan's money? Okay, there it is. Right there. You know, every Wednesday, I just go to my dealer.
Every Wednesday.
You know.
Money disappears.
My money disappears. You know, but and you know, the thing is, and this isn't going against the big two, per se, because they do a lot of good. But we were talking yesterday in our book club, we were talking about when people talk about independent comics and small press, really Dark Horse, which had Star Wars for the longest time, and I mean they've been around since the late 80s.
Well, Dark Horse and IDW and Image, they're not small press anymore.
They're not small press. No. I mean they're still considered independent, I guess, because they're not the big two. But I mean, like Boom Studios getting their hands on Big Trouble in Little China, that is huge. I mean, because that taps into a market that we haven't seen anything out of that property since, what was Big Trouble Little China, 84, 85?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somewhere in there.
And I just think that's interesting that a lot of these comic companies are still considered small, but they're doing big things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Well, you had actually just mentioned Power Rangers in there because Boom Studios has them. We actually finally got a chance to see the Power Rangers movies also.
Oh, yeah.
Did you like it?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was awesome. And what was cool was it was basically they took the TV series and updated it. It's basically all they did.
They did.
But if you look at the fights against the putties, the fights with the Megazords and stuff, although it's a lot of CG and the action is a lot better, the fighting's actually better, I think, it still felt like you're watching Godzilla-style filming. Somehow the way they filmed it, it looked like they were on a set with miniatures or something, almost. It had the feel of the fights from the original series. But in the right way. It's like they had the good stuff out of it, but and then the stuff that made it super, super cheesy wasn't. It was toned down a little bit.
Right. Well, they did away with a lot of the cheesy stuff because Dawn is not. Dawn suffers with my love of the Power Rangers.
I'm not a fan of that show at all.
She's not, and I really love the original Mighty Morphin series.
Yeah.
Okay. But Dawn actually walked out of that, and she said, "You know, they could have not called it a Power Rangers movie, and I would have joined. I would have enjoyed it just as much."
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, it was. I thought it was, for someone who's not a fan of the show, I thought it was a good movie. Like it had a decent story. I ignored the plot holes because it was for a younger crowd, technically speaking. But it had a decent story. It had a lot of good action, and it had the effects that you'd want from a really well made show.
Right.
That you know you're not going to get on the show itself.
Yeah.
And I love the Easter egg at the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, yeah,
that was awesome.
So the only thing is, I don't know.
Well, and you had the Easter egg in it,
right?
When Tommy and Amy showed up in it,
right?
And then at the end, you had the potential lead-in for the sequel.
Yeah,
if we're getting a sequel, I don't know how.
I think this did okay. I don't think it did phenomenal. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know that they were expecting phenomenal out of it.
I don't think they were.
I mean, It really had a certain crowd. They knew they weren't going to get the huge mainstream audience that a lot of blockbusters get.
Right.
But for when it was released and for what it did, I'm pretty sure it did just fine.
And honestly, I think the way it was even marketed, it wasn't marketed per se to little kids. Like, if you think about it.
A lot of it was not for little kids.
It wasn't.
Well, you got to remember, the people who were watching Mighty Morphin Power Rangers are in their late 20s, early 30s right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And it was interesting that the issues that they gave the Rangers, I liked it. It added depth to these guys because otherwise, I mean, let's face it, in the series, they were pretty much two-dimensional.
I liked the fact that they weren't just, they threw them all together and everyone was best friends right away.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the TV show always was. Like, everyone seemed to love each other right away.
Right.
Where this was a little more realistic, like, screw you, I don't like you, who are you, what are you talking about? Like, they didn't really like each other at all at the beginning.
Right.
Well, I think the major difference between the regular series and this now, the series and the movies they've made, were all basically kaiju movies.
Yeah.
If you watch Japanese kaiju movies, any of the monster movies, Godzilla, Gamera, or any of the other ones that are out there, they have a specific style that's what they are. And the Power Rangers, all the TV series and the movies they've made up to this point have all been kaiju TV series and movies.
Mm-hmm.
This was not. This was an American, but it was a sci-fi movie.
Right.
A sci-fi superhero movie. So you got true. Some of the stuff that felt kaiju, but it didn't go into the camp.
Right.
So I think it was a solid movie. Anybody who hasn't given it a chance, get out there and check it out. Because I know it's out there available now, so...
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Actually, okay, this may not be geeky news. Well, actually, it is geeky news.
It is geeky. For your sake.
We lost, the geek community lost someone today. Or was it yesterday?
The other day.
Stephen First, who was famous from Babylon 5.
And, oh, I didn't know that.
And Animal House.
And Animal House, yeah.
Yeah.
He was only 63 years old.
Yeah, you know, he was only 63, and if anybody needs help remembering him, he was the guy that shot the...
He's the one who shot the horse, who shot the gun that gave the horse the heart attack that cracks Kylan up that he can't even talk about right now, because he's laughing so hard.
Actually, I don't have... If I had an extra button on this, I had to set up with the horse on it.
Yeah, just so you know, that was the significance. As soon as I told Kylan this happened, he was like, oh, he shot the gun that gave the horse the heart attack.
That's all right.
You okay, honey?
Kylan's dying over here on us.
He really is. He can't even talk about it without laughing. He hasn't even watched the scene or heard the noise in a long time, and he still can't talk about it.
You know, about once every couple of months, I do go back to YouTube and I watch it. Okay,
I can move on from this.
I'm fine now. Yeah, so what? Yeah, so Steven first.
What did he play on Babylon 5?
He was one of the ambassador's assistant. Dang.
Was he Veer? Londo's ambassador? Londo's assistant?
Londo's assistant, yes.
Man, Babylon 5, if you guys want to get Babylon 5 autographs, do it now. We lost a couple months ago the guy who played Garibaldi. We lost Veer now.
Yeah, I mean, geez, never know.
Like I said, that's another show they need to get out there on regular streaming. Right now, you can get it other places, and you can get it, I think you can buy it, but that's about it.
Actually, if you have Go on your phone.
Yeah, Go 90.
Go 90, they have the entire series there.
But that's the only place you can get it, and it's only available on your phone. I've looked on my Rokus, I've looked on the Fire Stick, I've looked online. I think you can watch it on your computer, but there's no streaming that has it.
Right. No, there's not, and it's a hard series to find, you know, and it was when the show was on. You know, a lot of people pitted it against Deep Space Nine.
Well, yeah, they were both space station shows, and they were both politically driven, really.
Right, but it was I loved both. I did, you know, and
I was willing to watch Babylon 5, but not Star Trek.
Yeah, well, the difference, the major difference was the general view of the universe. So they both took the same general premise. You have a space station with all these different races that are stuck together on this station. They have to figure out how to coexist. And in Star Trek on Deep Space Nine, you got the optimistic utopian version of the future. In Babylon 5, it was more hardened and
realistic,
reality-based.
Yeah, well,
maybe
that's
why I preferred it.
Yeah, because with Babylon 5, each section of the station had its own separate environment and community, and they would occasionally get together. Whereas in Deep Space Nine,
it was unrealistic that people would get along that well.
That's
why I didn't like it.
Which we had that discussion yesterday.
Yeah, we did. We talked about it a lot yesterday.
One of the things I said that probably the most unrealistic of Gene Roddenberry's vision for our future is everybody getting along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That human nature would basically change so much that everyone would get along.
You know, and it's sad because in principle, everything is scientifically possible to have transporters and deep space travel and even translight speed. You can have all that, but probably the most difficult one will be eradicating all the negativity that we see. Because I'm like, Gene, I'm glad you believe that, because I would love to see that happen. I'm trying to do my part.
But most things you see now are taking after the reality-based stuff. Like, if you look at, like, Dark Matter, because that just started up again. We've watched the first couple episodes, and that's... no one's getting along.
Right. Yeah.
I'm watching Enterprise now, and it's interesting that on Enterprise, the humans, we have it all together here, but we just don't play well with others.
Yeah, they're still learning how to play well with others out there. Vicky and I are about halfway through the second season on Enterprise right now.
And I'm remembering that I kind of liked it. You know, it's not the best. It's not by far not my favorite Star Trek series, but I like it, you know?
We got to schedule another Star Trek show. Maybe when you get done with Enterprise, we finish up Enterprise, we'll do something about that.
Sounds good.
So, but we're actually getting close to time. We needed to get to this interview. So, why don't you guys let me know, who is it? Derek Ferguson is the author we interviewed, and why don't you tell us a little bit about him, that whatever you don't cover actually in the interview. Why don't you set this up, Kylan?
What didn't we cover? He's in Brooklyn. That's what we didn't cover in the interview.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing we didn't cover. Like, Derek is you guys heard me talk about on the show, and you've heard me, you've seen that I've like written blogs about the new pulp movement, and Derek has been a part of that, and he's a lot, but he doesn't just write pulp. There's some other stuff that he gets into as well, and that's something that we talk about in this interview.
Yeah, we go through a bit of his history as a geek, from when it wasn't cool to be a geek to when it was, and his love of movies and the type of writing he does and his blogs and a bit of everything.
Yeah, awesome. So,
I know I just got done reading the Four Bullets for Dylan, and I know you guys mm-hmm. probably talk about the Dylan character, and I had fun with it. It was just a fun adventure book.
Yeah, exactly. That's and I had a feeling that if you gave it a chance, that you would love Dylan. Like he's a fun character. You know, I think that if he lived in real life, if he came to Akron, half of downtown would be destroyed. But
pretty much,
that's okay.
But that's a characteristic of pulp adventure. That basically the action is so over the top. It's basically like we've said on the show, especially over the last couple months, somehow we've been talking a lot about the late 80s or 80s and 90s syndicated action shows mm-hmm. and how they were so over the top and they're blowing everything up. And that's basically what the pulp novels are, the modern pulp, these Dylan books. It's like imagine the A-Team all in one guy.
Yeah, it's the TV version of pulp, really, to see a lot of these syndicated shows, the action shows.
It is, sure.
But it's a fun read, and he was cool to talk to. He was really laid back, and he was willing to give it. I mean, we talked to him technically for about an hour or so, and we got it down to like a 30-35 minute interview. So
cool.
And he already said that we just have to ask him back, and he'd come back on.
Yeah, he'd come back. So there you go.
Well, I'm definitely gonna have to get in on that interview once it's time. Give me a Vicky on there. So,
yep. Thank you.
But without any further ado, this is Derek Ferguson.
Geeksters, I am here with author extraordinaire, a huge part of the New Pulp movement. You've read my blogs about New Pulp, and you heard me going on about it on the show. Well, here is one of my new additions as a favorite author, Derek Ferguson.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm overwhelmed to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and I'll just be honest with you. Like, I believe that much like Dr. Watson is the scribe for Sherlock, I believe that you're the scribe for Dylan. Like, all this stuff is actually going on in the world, and we know nothing about it. But are you actually there as this stuff is going on, or does he tell you? How's that work?
That's very flattering. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's one of the most flattering things I hope. About my stuff. No, actually, much like what Robert E. Howard said about Conan, and he famously said that he never felt like he actually created Conan, like Conan was just somebody that came to him and sat down and told him these stories, and he was just, you know, transcribing them. I feel pretty much the same way about Dylan. He just comes to me and tells me, you know, okay, well, this is what I've been into the last couple of weeks. Write it down, and I'll be back in a couple of months with something else for you to write down, and that's it.
So from reading some of your backstory.
Deep breaths, Kylan. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
I'm geeking out a little bit over here. I can't lie. You grew up a geek, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was a geek before geek was a term. I grew up, you know, I grew up when it was not cool to be a geek. You know, you got beaten up for being a geek. You know, you didn't read comic books in public.
Right.
That's how old I am.
Oh, God, no, no.
But no, we got you into trouble. You know, people looked at you kind of funny if you were still reading comic books past a certain age, you know. So, yeah, and I mean, I saw Star Wars during its original theatrical run back in 1977. I saw it like six times.
Nice.
I went to the movie theater to see it, which was the only way you could see it back then. You had to go to the movie theaters.
That's true.
You know, so yeah, I've been a geek since I was knee-high to a knee, you know, ever since I saw my first Ray Harryhausen movie on Channel 9, you know, and stuff like that, you know. I mean, as far back as I can remember, I've always been in love with fantastic fiction and the pulp and comics and anything imaginative, you know, I was there. I was in love with it.
So you came into pulp through comics and that sort of thing. Now, I know a lot of us are probably our first experience is Doc Savage. Well, is that true for you?
Well, what happened was that, yeah, of course, I had been reading comic books old enough to read, you know, and I was, according to who were there, and they claim I started reading at around the age of two. And, you know, I was reading comic books as far back as I can remember. And I had heard about Doc Savage. I had, you know, I knew of the character, but didn't get my hands on any stories until what I call the Big Pulp boom of the 1970s. And I was in high school at the time. And that's when Bantam started reprinting the original Doc Savage, you know, pulps in paperback form with those wonderful James Bomber covers. And then they, and then there was another company, they reissued the with covers by Jim Steranko. And then there was the Tarzan books that that had Neil Adams covers. And it, like all of these pulp characters from the 30s had this great resurgence in the mid to late 1970s. And because of the success of those characters, well, of course, that started people writing stuff like the Destroyer.
Right.
And the Executioner and the Inquisitor and the Annihilator and all of these other, you know, original paperback series that were influenced by these pulp characters. And that's why I call it the big pulp boom of the 1970s, because all of these characters came back then, you know. And you could walk into a bookstore and you could buy like a paperback for 50, 75 cents. So, I mean, yes, I would go on my allowance. I'd blow my whole allowance on Amino paperbacks.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, because if you had $5 in your pocket, and if you were into comic books and if you was into pulps, that was it. You go and you binge, because comic books, remember, were only 15, 25 cents back then. So, I mean, you know, yeah, I was set for the weekend, man. Forget about it.
And see, and I remember being a kid and, you know, seeing all those, the Doc Savage books, and I just remember being drawn to them, but for some reason, I knew that if I tried to bring one of those home, my mom wasn't having it. It was enough that she had to deal with me pretending that I was, you know, Steve Austin. Last thing she needed was me pretending that I was the world's strongest and smartest man, even though I felt like I was well on my way to that at that point anyway. But, you know. So now you get in the 80s, and I have to bring this up because I am such a fan of this character, and I know you are too. Buckaroo Banzai. He just pops up. Well, he kind of faded in and not quite faded out, because those of us who caught on to him held on to him. But
absolutely. Yeah.
So were you one of those few people that was lucky enough to actually see it in the theater?
Oh, absolutely. I saw Buckaroo Banzai in theaters. I saw it like 4 or 5 times in theaters. Because, you know, I went back to see it over and over. Because, like I said, back then, that was the only way you could see a movie when it originally came out. And I just kept going back to see it because I immediately got what they were doing.
Right.
First time I saw the movie, I said, bam, okay, yeah, that's Pulp. I got it. And it wasn't a clone of Doc Savage, but it was close enough, and it had a modern hip sensibility, which is why I now classify Buckaroo Banzai as probably like the first real new pulp movie.
Right.
Because it had the feel of the 1930s and everything like that. And if you were into, I mean, the pulps at all, you got the vibe. They had that vibe. The guy that wrote that, I don't remember his name right now, but yeah, this guy knows his pulps inside and out. But he was able to give it a modern spin and a modern sensibility that elevated it from being a mere copy. And that's why Buckaroo Banzai is still so popular today, because, you know, it just had that modern sensibility that elevated it. It wasn't a direct copy, but Doc Savage, his DNA is in there, definitely. It's a wonderful movie. I can't imagine anybody that, and it's one of those movies, if you say you don't like it, well, then we can't be friends.
in my circle of friends, there's like two people. I don't know if they just don't get it, but it's hard. It's hard because that movie changed my life, you know. And I tried.
You know why it's hard for people to get it? Because, okay, first of all, look how it's structured. It's structured, and I actually stole this from when I did Dylan and the Voice of Odin. I stole. First of all, I'm going to confess, I steal ruthlessly. I'm one of those writers that believe that, yeah, steal anything that you can that'll make your stuff work. And as long as you, you know, put your own spin on it. So Buckaroo Banzai, first of all, it was hard for people to get into because the conceit of Buckaroo Banzai is that this is a film series that's been going on for a while, and we're just catching, you know, we're catching just another installment.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's the entire conceit of it. It's the same thing I did with Dylan in The Voice of Odin. When it opens up, you notice I just open it up. I don't explain anything. It's the conceit that this is a book series that's been going on for a while, and you're just coming into another entry in it.
Yeah, I feel like that.
Oh, you did? Well, see, it worked.
It worked, because I was like, I know that this is the first book, but it feels like there's other stuff that's happened before, and I just dropped in the middle of it. So, okay, I'm here. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. That was the whole point of why I did it like that. I said, okay, I just want people to feel like they came in the middle, and this is like, I don't know, the 10th book that's in the series. That's why I make reference to other stuff that's been going on, and this has happened. And it's that whole vibe. And that's why I think Buckaroo Banzai is difficult for a lot of people to get into, because they can't get into that mind. And they're saying, okay. Okay, well, I don't understand what's this and what's that. And the writer, I'm trying to think, is Earl something. And I don't want to mangle his name.
Earl MacRouse.
Thank you. That's it. And he doesn't slow down to explain anything to you. He just goes ahead and just puts you in the middle of the story, and you just got to catch up. Some people don't want to do that. Some people, let's face it, are lazy. They want everything about the movie.
Did you ever read the novel?
Yes, yes, yeah. As a matter of fact, I don't know what I did with my copy. Like, a whole other world that's going on in that novel.
I mean, he annotates stuff. He writes it like there's other books. And I would research, I'm like, okay, are there other books? I don't even know. And it's just like what you did with Dylan. That's like, are there books before? I didn't even know. But yes, so you succeeded.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Listen, my work is done.
Now, there's a couple of things that you mentioned within the Dylan books, and I'm just curious about a couple of them. Okay, the Steranko belt. Is this a nod to Jim Steranko?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, because I'm totally picturing like a belt like Nick Fury would wear, except it's got a big D on it because, you know.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah. There's a lot of Jim Steranko's Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. in Dylan. There really is. You know, and I've got the trade paperback. Matter of fact, I'm on my third copy because I read it and reread it so often that pages start falling out. And, yeah, and when I call Dylan's belt, because, you know, Bruce Wayne's got that trademark. So, you know, I couldn't call it a utility belt, so I had to call it something. So then I thought about, you know, remember those funky belts that Nick Fury used to wear with all kind of pouches and crap hanging off of it?
Yep, right.
And I said, yeah, okay.
When you said Steranko belt, like, that spoke to me as a fan of pulp novels. And as a fan of comics, because knowing what you're talking about, because that's a very distinctive look. And so I just had this image.
Exactly.
It worked, man. It totally worked.
Yeah, exactly. Because when I say Steranko belt, bam, you get an image. Okay, I know what the belt looks like. I do not have to describe it any further. If you know anything about Jim Steranko, and chances are if you're reading Dylan, yeah, you've read stuff. Image comes to your head, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. And the characters that surround him, both the heroes and the villains, this world that he lives in, I mean, there's no way in the world that Dylan could ever have just a regular job. No matter how much he complains about needing to get a real job, he would go nuts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, one thing that I always wanted to get across, that because I have no use for or patience with protagonists who whine and moan and complain how they wish they could lead a normal life and this and that. Dylan has never led a normal life, and he realizes he's not going to have one. Yes, he does like to take his little vacations every once in a while. We got a good job. But, I mean, Dylan actually goes off and he works in a McDonald's, you know, for a couple of months just to see how it feels, you know, just see how it feels. But he goes back to his life of adventure because that is really all he knows, and he enjoys it. And he realizes that for, you know, he's making some kind of a difference in this crazy world he's in of supervillains and you know, spy agencies and secret societies and whatever, you know. And he enjoys, you know, he enjoys his life.
He seems to be still at the same time be an everyman, even though he has all these skills and talents. And although he knows people who could sleep on a bed of money like it's nothing, but he is still this everyman who still seems very approachable. You know, when you're reading the book, there's some, especially some of the pulp heroes that come out of the late 70s and early 80s, some of these guys you read and you just almost roll your eyes at, you know, they're just so good that the bullet just missed it, or they just perfectly timed this punch. Whereas for some reason, Dylan has this, he does all this, but at the same time, he can get jacked up pretty bad, and you can understand that, but he still fights through it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, yes, he's a supremely skilled human being with a couple of extra edges on his side, but still, he is a human being. And he's subject to, yeah. And if you catch him in, you know, if you catch him on a bad day or if you blindside him, yeah, you can jack him up now. But, you know, I mean, it's no good to have a hero who is totally invincible, especially one if you're planning on writing a series about him. As, you know, I did, because right from the start, I said, well, I know this guy's going to last through at least 10 books, and I do have 10 books planned out. After that, I have no idea. We'll see where we go from there. But and even though Doc Savage was an influence on him, I didn't want him to be invincible like Doc. I mean, because let's face it, we know this Doc Savage. Nothing's ever going to happen to him. No matter what, Doc is going to figure a way out of it. Yeah, I mean, there's really no... Okay, you read the first dozen or so Doc Savages, and you say, okay, this guy... But after that, then, once you got the formula down, you pretty much know that Doc is nothing that's going to happen.
No, no.
With Dylan, though, I always try to have a little thing in there where you say, well, maybe, okay, he's going to come out of it, but maybe he might not come out in the same state he was when he went in.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he got cut, and I was like... Okay.
Yeah.
Facing off against, I can't think of his name now, the demon guy, the first one, the one in armor, and then Dagna was the one who saved him, because I'm like, how is he going to come out of this? And then, you know, next thing you know, bullet and head goes popping off.
Yeah, well, he was getting slapped around, and, you know, he was getting slapped around pretty good at that point.
There's a lot of writers out there that won't let their... Let their protagonist get slapped around. You let him get slapped around pretty hard. You know, he got rattled.
Yeah, well, I'm not afraid to let him get slapped around because that's when you can see what the character is really made of, what he's losing. You know, not when he's winning. I mean, yeah, okay, it's easy for him to be wisecrack when he's, you know, I mean, when he's on top of the world and he's winning, but, you know, when he's losing, that's when you really see what he's made of and what he is capable of.
Right.
So I think that was another reason why people like the characters, because I show different moods of him. We've seen Dylan mad. We've seen him, you know, we've seen him joke with friends. We've seen him with his enemies. We've even seen him look foolish. You know, I don't, you know what? I love putting him in situations where he's not in control and he actually does look a little bit foolish. Like if you've ever read Dylan and the Badass Belt Buckle, you know, that's a situation where, you know, It gets totally away from him.
Is that the story that's in Black Pulp?
No, that Dylan and the Badass Belt Buckle is in Four Bullets for Dylan.
Yes, okay.
That's the one where he's lost in the jungle, him and Eli with the actress.
I haven't read that yet. That's next on the list, though, because I'm binging Dylan, so, you know.
I won't spoil it for you then, no.
Thank you. Well, okay, now I want to ask you about, you've done some Weird West stuff as well. Done some stuff with Bass Reeves.
Yeah.
And how did you come about that?
Bass Reeves, okay. Set the Wayback Machine for the first Pulp Art convention. So that was where I first met face-to-face a lot of my colleagues, such as Tommy Hancock, Van Allen Plexico, Bobby Nash, Who else? Wayne Reinagle. You know, there was a whole bunch of us there. Barry Reese was there. You know, this was like, you know, a gathering of titans all in one spot, you know. And that's where I met Ron Fortier, the, you know, publisher and captain of Airship 27. And when we were there, he and his partner, Rob Davis, were showing me pictures that Rob had drawn. And Ron had told me about this character, Vash Reeves, real-life guy, who, in all of my years, I had never heard of.
Okay.
I never heard of this black lawman who apparently bordered on the superhuman, you know. And all the stuff that he did was documented fact. And Ron said that he had been trying to do a graphic novel of this character. Couldn't find a single publisher interested in it. Big surprise, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So what happened was that, you know, Ron told me about this character, and I said, wow. I said, okay, well, listen, if you ever do anything with him, you know, let me know. Okay, we jump in the Wayback Machine, come to the present. Ron, tired of waiting to do a graphic novel, it's time to do a book. And he contacted a bunch of writers, me included, which is good for him because then I would have had to hunt him down and break his legs if he did not include me. I myself went out and bought the biography, and I read it about two or three times. And then I sat down and I wrote the story and I sent it to Ron, and the rest is history. You know, it was a wonderful experience for me creatively because up until then, all I had written was weird westerns. I had never written a quote, I'm making the air quote things in the air, quote unquote straight western, you know. I never did. And you know what? A weird western is easy to write because you can get away with it because you're making the stuff up. You know, who's going to contradict you and say, okay, well, Spanish settlers didn't exist in Nevada in 1812. Well, shut up. I made it up. Yeah, I couldn't do that with Vash Reeves. I had to stick to historical. I mean, you know, yeah, of course you can fudge it here and there, but you can't go crazy.
Right.
And actually, it was a lot of fun to do, you know. And I wrote another story and said, okay, well, the first one, we're going to saddle up again. I said, okay, well, I got another story ready to go. He said, well, send it to me. And I did.
Right.
And there's going to be a volume any day now.
Cool.
Well, I mean, that's cool because I think maybe about a year or so ago was when I first heard of Vash Reeves. And there's a rumor out there that the Lone Ranger was inspired by tales of Vash Reeves.
Bogus.
Okay, cool. So we know that's bogus now. So good. But there was a TV show called Timeless. Where these people travel back to different time periods, and they travel back to like the late 1800s because they needed Vash Reeves to hunt down Jesse James.
Okay.
In this time period. Well, basically, he was the one who took down Jesse James. The thing is, you know, all of a sudden, all this stuff is coming out, and I wish when I was a kid that I had heard these stories. But then I go in, and I type in Vash Reeves, I see your collection.
Ah, okay.
And I'm like, I didn't know this was out there. So I'm halfway tempted to maybe shoot something over to my nephew and introduce him to, hey, you want to read a good Western? Here. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It boggles my mind because there is no good reason why Vash Reeves should not be as well known as, say, Wyatt Earp or Bat Masterson or, you know, any one of a number of Western characters that we still know about and we're familiar about, and every couple of years they'll make movies about it, TV shows, stuff like that. But Vash Reeves, like I said, I hadn't, in all of my years, got a whiff that this guy even existed. Ron told me about him. Once he told me about him, I mean, forget about it. I said, listen, I got to be a part of this, Ron. He said, yeah, okay, listen, no problem. He said, when I get ready to go, he said, I'm gonna call you up. And that's what he did. He said, listen, we're ready to go. The very day he told me he wanted a Vash Reeves story, I sat down and I did not get up from my desk until the story was finished. I think I wrote it in like 72 hours.
Ooh, wow. So I could imagine the research for that must have been really fun, too.
You know what? It cannot be funny. See, I'm the type that I'll make up a fact. But I felt an obligation to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to play this straight. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to read up on this character. And really, there was some stuff in there when I did research. I said, okay, well, I can incorporate this into my story, which made it even better as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the two bad three stories that I did, like two of the things that I'm really proud of. And, I mean, I'm so behind. This past month, I had a whole bunch of personal stuff that's going on that nobody wants to hear about, but it threw me off my schedule, and I'm trying to get back on my schedule now. And one of the things I want to do is I want to write a Bass Reeves novel, you know, so I'm hoping I can get to do that, you know, hopefully by the end of this year or the beginning of next year.
Nice.
Well, now I'll be keeping my eyes and ears open for that. Going back into comics for a bit, are you still reading now, or do you just still, like, keep up with what's going on in comics?
No. I mean, you know what? I keep up what's going on as far as independent comics. So Marvel and DC, I kicked the habit years ago. I went cold turkey. And I said, no, I can't hang with them any longer because I just didn't like the way that both DC and Marvel were going. Call me old fashioned. I read comics about heroes fighting villains, not heroes fighting each other and killing each other and everything being absolutely without any hope or bleakness and, you know, that stuff. I don't know. Some people thrive on that. You know, some people seem to need that kind of darkness in their entertainment. And listen, if that's what you want to read, God bless. But, you know, I can't swing that way, especially not with characters I grew up reading and, you know, wanting to write stories about characters like them, with the value, a lot of good independent comics. And mainly what I do is I reread my collection from the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got plenty of 1970s and 80s comics that I love rereading them. You know, Master of Kung Fu, you know. Now I can sit and read that over and over and over again, but no.
That's one of his favorites.
Yeah, Master of Kung Fu. You kidding me? Shoot, what? Master of Kung Fu rules.
Marvel has just released a second volume on Omnibus from a Master of Kung Fu.
Uh-huh.
And, like, the first one was, like, $120. It is hardbound with a bunch of issues in it. And the second one, I'm sitting there like, can I justify that? I got comics I'm still reading from last month.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to my wife.
You actually talk to your wife?
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
I know, it's a crazy concept. And I was telling her that I think I've kind of lost the taste for a lot of the men's adventure novels from the 80s and early 90s, and that I'm being drawn more into the pulp, especially not strictly just the new pulp stuff. I like some of the old pulp as well. And I told her that it's because it seems like that those characters, they did the right thing for the sake of it being right. It wasn't because of this political leaning or that ideology. There was right and there was wrong, and it didn't matter what flag you were waving or the color of your skin or whatever. That was the motivation for what they did. I'm realizing that I'm drawn more into that, and it pulls me more away from a lot of those old books from the 80s and early 90s. You being a part of the new pulp movement, is that a true statement, or?
Well, okay. You know what? It all depends on, and me, I'm always going to bring it back to character. Take somebody like Captain America, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you said, characters like him and Superman, they are always going to do the right thing simply because it's the right thing. I mean, they don't need to justify why they do what they do. They do it because it's what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It never occurs to them to do anything different. Now, to some people, that's boring. You know, they say, oh, I'm just a blue boy scout. Well, yes, he is. And what's wrong with that? You know, not everybody is supposed to be the Punisher. Not everybody is supposed to be Batman, you know, and even Batman, as bleak as he can be, we can still count on him to do the right thing. But they turned Batman like almost into like himself, you know. I have nothing against a character to say like the Punisher, who was created and designed to be what he is. But when you try to take a character like Captain America or Spider-Man and turn them into a Punisher-like character. And if you're going to turn Spider-Man into a Punisher-like character, don't make it Peter Parker. Make it somebody else. Because that's not Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. You have to understand, this is the character. This is who he is. Well, he can go into darkness. Well, sure he can. Everybody's got their dark moments. But there's such a thing as taking it too far.
Right.
And if you do take him into that dark spot in his life, then do it for a reason. Do it because when he comes back to who he is, he's enlightened the knowledge of himself and of his world and how to operate in it. You can turn a light character drunk, sure. And matter of fact, you're supposed to every once in a while. But you're not trying the character totally out of shape in order to, as you so accurately point out, promote your own political or, you know, I mean, listen, I don't know what kind of trip some of these writers are on, but tell a story. If you want to send a message, use Western Union.
Right.
And about 30% of your listeners not going to understand what that reference is. Google is your friend. But, you know, first and foremost, tell me a story. I will now step off the soapbox.
I like it. I totally agree. I mean, I've seen two for sure, really good books that started off really strong, but because they were so heavily influenced by the writer's politics, those books ended up getting canceled.
Yeah.
And I started losing it.
I mean, everybody has some kind of axe to grind now, and they want to inflict it on people in their fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you want to do that, then you know what? Go create an original character, and then you can explore your political agenda through that character, if that's what you want to do. Like, say, if I was, which it'll never happen, but let's just say for the sake of argument that Marvel came to me and said, well, Dirk, listen, we want you to write Spider-Man. Okay, I have no problem with doing that, but, okay, let's make it clear. My Spider-Man is going to be like classic Spider-Man, like 60s, 70s kind of stuff. I would take it back to that. I'm not going to give you a Spider-Man that's going to, you know, be, you know, following my particular political leanings. Now, if you want to sit down and over coffee and discuss politics with me, I'm willing to do that. But I'm not going to take it out on you in my fiction. That's not my job, I think, as a fiction writer. I see my job as a fiction writer primarily, I'm here to entertain you. Like, you know, like KC say, I'm your boogeyman. I'm here to do whatever I can. And whatever I can is entertain you the best way I know how to do.
Right.
Just that simple.
You succeed as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
I love the fact that I didn't have to get any, I didn't get any heavy-handed, well, you know, because of his love for freedom, blah, blah, blah. It's like there's right and there's wrong, and that's what Dylan is driven by. And I like that. I like being able to sit down with that.
Let's face it, people like, they always want to like heroes. And they always want to read about heroes. They want to see heroes on TV. They're going to go to the movie. Why are we so popular? Plain and simple. People want to see them because they've got heroes in them.
Right.
Right. That's what drives people to the movies and then go buy the DVD and then watch it on TV, even when they got the DVD at home.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, Derek, thank you for your time, man. I can't wait to get into the Bass Reeves stuff. I can't wait to get more Dylan stuff. Where can our listeners find you?
Oh, God, I'm all over the place. Okay, here's what you do. You go online, and there are three main places where you can find me. First of all, there is my blog, Blood and Ink. Now, that's where I kind of like what's going on and what future projects I've got working with. I also do from time to time interviews with other authors because I'm as nosy as the next guy, and this is a way for me to find out more about other writers. I just do an interview with them, and they think that I'm promoting them when I'm just being sneaky and nosy and finding out more about them. So that's where you want to go first. Now, if you're a movie fan, you can also go to the Ferguson Theater, which is where I have movie reviews, because as anybody who knows me for any length of time knows, I'm a huge movie fan. So you can go there. You can read my movie reviews. They're perfectly free. Yeah. And you can indulge yourself. And then there is my Dylan blog. There is a blog I have that is totally devoted. There's anything you want to know about the character before diving into the books themselves, that's the best place to start. It has background on Dylan himself, on various of the stories and novels. There's essays by other people who have read the stories and novels and loved them, and, you know, they wanted to contribute something. It's a good place to start. So those are the three main places that you would go to if you want to find out more about me. And, of course, I'm on Facebook. I'm not, you know, I'm on Twitter. Or No, I'm not on Snapchat. But, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Most of the usual places.
yeah, you know.
My wife happened to cross your movie blog.
Yeah, I read some of the reviews. I like that you have a mix of current movies and then some past movies, too. I think that's a cool thing to do.
Yeah, because you know why? Because there are so many movies, and I get this all the time. I'll write a review of something, and somebody will email me and say, you know, I didn't even know this movie existed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, really? And because most people, their movie knowledge goes back about like 10, 15 years. You know, but me, I've been watching movies ever since I was behind to a knee. And, you know, there's a lot of cool movies. 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and especially the 70s, which was a really batshit insane period for movies, you know. I really like being able to turn people on to movies that they haven't seen or may not even know exist, you know. There's a great deal of satisfaction that I get out of it. Knowledge should be shared. I get a great deal of satisfaction out of that.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Man, thank you for your time, and we would love to have you back on the show again.
Listen, thank you so much for inviting me. I never turn down an opportunity to run my mouth, and anytime you want to have me back on, all you got to do is just pick up the phone.
All right, well, listeners, Derek Ferguson, grab some books and
look them up online.
Look them up.
Go to Amazon.com. Papa needs a new pair of everything.
Thanks again to Derek for taking time out of his busy schedule to talk to us. And, man, that was a blast.
Yeah, he's a fun guy to talk to for sure.
Yeah, I kind of regret the fact that I had to miss it, but we had already rescheduled with Marcus like twice already.
Right. Well, hey, so, like you said, he'll be back anytime. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, talking about that, look at in your love of the pulp stuff, that Marcus's books, I was talking to him, and really, his fit in with pulp also, except the difference
it
is does. His is in a superhero world.
His does. Yeah, his is a very I see it as being akin to that new pulp movement as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty much there.
And you know, if you look at Derek's books, Derek has, like I said, that Four Bullets for Dylan a lot. He has some books with short stories, but he's got some novels also, which I'm getting ready to start Dylan in The Voice of Odin?
Yes.
So it's like, and that's, Marcus started out doing short collections of short stories. Now he has a series of three books in the iVillain series,
right.
All about Clyde.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Along with, I guess, he's working on a new one, too, I believe, now.
Yeah. Well, he keeps telling me that how my character keeps changing in the books, the battle kilt keeps changing. And as he's writing it, the character changes. Because I know he's got a character that's me, and he's got one that's you.
That's what happens when you write your books like that. Your characters will change however they want to, and they'll tell you which way they want to go.
I discovered that when I wrote my first novel, because I had in my head how the plot was going, and that was that. I had written down, so it was law. And as I'm writing a scene, all of a sudden, my character says, no, I'm going to do this. And I'm like, no, that's not how I wrote this. And they have a life of their own. They really do.
It's kind of weird, but yeah.
Yeah.
I know, if you're, you have to be a writer, understand, because I know people think, well, you're writing that character, you're control. I'm not controlling that character.
You're just chronicling the story.
That's
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
And that's actually some of what Mark's having to do with working with Marcus to do these audiobooks is he's trying to find the voice Marcus wants, the way Marcus wants to do the inflections and stuff for Cly. Because Mark has it in his head who Cly is. Marcus, who's the writer, has an idea in his head who it is. It's the two of them working together to get it to be because the voice is there. Mark's voice is perfect for this. Now it's a matter of just getting the inflections right, the emphasis in the right spots, the pauses in the right spots, things like that. Which we give it one or two more sessions, and that's going to be perfect.
Right.
But hopefully, this book, the audiobook, we're hoping to have out by Christmas.
Okay.
Oh, so, all right. Sweet.
This is the largest project I've ever worked on.
Nice.
So I'm kind of scared, but it was going to be fun. So is there anything else you guys got before we wrap this up tonight?
I saw
a face with a water cannon.
Yeah.
I saw a photo of they started filming Deadpool 2.
Okay.
And Ryan Reynolds shared a photo of Deadpool lounging in front of the X-Men mansion.
Oh, no.
That's where the filming is starting.
Nice.
Oh.
So I wonder if they're going to actually get James McAvoy or Patrick Stewart in this movie at all.
Probably not, but they have definitely added a couple of other mutants that will be in the mansion area.
Good.
Oh, I can imagine what he's going to say about that.
Yeah, uh-huh. So, and of course, if you keep track of any of the other actors on like Instagram and Twitter, Josh Brolin has been posting pictures as well. He now has the Cable haircut.
Oh my God, he looks like him.
It's scary how much he looks like the character now. Awesome. But yeah, he has the haircut. He keeps posting updates of his workouts. So there's a bit. It's moving on. That's my Deadpool download. It hasn't happened in a while. So there you go.
Okay. Well, if that's all we got, Vicky, do you have anything else?
No, just I'm getting ready for my projects coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. Next week's going to be interesting for the Meeplecast. And remember, Geeksters, the Meeplecast next weekend or this weekend coming up. But the interesting thing is Vicky's going to have an art show in Cleveland that day also. So I get to go up to Cleveland, set her up. As soon as she's set, I get to drive down to Hudson and do the Meeplecast, then drive back up to Cleveland.
What's interesting for Ken is what we're saying.
Yes.
The rest of us
can just show up and do our thing, but Ken's the one doing the running around.
Or can always just come up and hang out and see me.
Yeah. After the show. Well, after the show, I'm going to see if who wants to run up there with us. Yeah.
From all the stuff that they've sent me, it's supposed to be pretty big.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So as we're getting ready to wrap this up, remember, Geeksters. Now, Mr. Long, do you have Derek's information in front of you? How do people can get a hold of him?
No, I don't, because it's in the interview.
Ah, well, I was just going to remind people how to do it.
But it will be in the notes for the show, because he has a movie blog, he has a general blog, he's on Facebook.
Well, there is Blood and Ink.
Blood and Ink is his main blog. Blood and Ink is his main blog. And Ink with Derek Ferguson.
And there's a Dylan blog, and also there's a Dylan page on Facebook as well.
So he really is all over the place. That's why it's easier just look in the notes for where you can find him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, to find us, you can find anything, everything GeekWatch1 at GeekWatch1.com. On all social media, anywhere and everywhere, it's GeekWatch1. If you put into GeekWatch1 into any search bar anywhere and you don't get GeekWatch1, let Miss Dawn know. She'll take care of that problem.
Oh, I'll take care of it, all right.
Also, you can email us at GeekWatch1@gmail.com. And like Vicky said, Miss Dawn is waiting for emails, guys. She wants to talk to you. She's a very personable person.
Yeah, I'm not that bad, really.
But you can find us also on the Tangentbound Network at tangentboundnetwork.com and Weeby Geeks Network at weebygeekspc.com. And then I think that wraps it up for today. So for Miss Dawn and for Kylan and for Vicky and for myself, just remember,
no matter where you go, there you are.
I don't know, there's just something about that book. And, oh, I do have to ask, why did you have to put Idris Elba? I have issues with Idris Elba, okay? Like, and my wife is saying over here that she thinks that Idris could be Dylan. I told her, no, Idris Elba cannot play Dylan. I have my own version of Dylan in my head, and it's not Idris Elba. And so
thank you for putting him in a book.
And I'm reading during the reception that Idris Elba was the MC, and I'm like, really?
And I forget who he was in the original version. I changed it for some reason. I have no idea why, but I changed it. But in the original version, because the Goldenville, the version that you read was the revised version. But in the original version, it was somebody else. But when I revised the book, when the new covers came out, done by Sean Ali, there were some things that I changed around and I upgraded it. And I said, well, I'm going to make Idris Elba, because Yeah, I get so many people all the time saying, oh, yeah, well, Idris Elba should play Dylan if there's a Dylan movie. And I said, well, I don't know if it'll ever happen. You know, yeah, I mean, you know, but listen, I have no preference myself for who's going to play him because, quite frankly, the studio's not going to ask me anyway. So, you know, as long as they're talented, good-looking, and knows how to say their line.
That's true. Well, there's one person that I think would be able to do it because they could be able to do all everything that Dylan does already. What? Michael Jai White. There, I said it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, Michael Jai White, that's the second name that most people say.
Oh, there you go.